Welcome back. This is Tom McIntyre, and this is part two of a personal experience with a student by the name of Jacinto. On that fateful day, Jacinto arrived to my door, no pass in hand. I suddenly found myself staring into the behavioral jaws of death, and it had bad breath. I congenially welcomed him and asked, "Where'd you come from?" "The street, man. I come from the street," he barked. "Yeah, me too," I replied. He gave me a sneer and said, "You? From the street?" "Yeah, man," I said roughly. "Sesame Street." He cracked up, and then he said he had me figured for Easy Street, which cracked me up, and we were able to have a nice conversation before I asked him to join my group. Now, it's impossible to condense our year and a half together into a few sentences, but long story made short, it's too late for that. I guess I'll keep going. His overall behavioral performance inside the school was erratic, but continually improving, and he was trying to make the switch at the schoolhouse door from tough street hood to energetic student, but the street corner often shadowed him into the hallways and the cafeterias and the yards. Overall, though, Jacinto was like a dandelion. Here was a kid who had been uprooted repeatedly, treated with poison, and yet he was still trying to thrive and blossom. And that's exactly what we want to create in our downtrodden kids who've been thrown on society's trash heap. Resilience. As caring educators, we want to nurture our students' ability to bounce back, keep hope, and continue striving to be a good person despite the hurdles being placed in their way by those misguided educators who think that getting tough with them is the best intervention. Sometimes I think that's my role in my profession, is to protect kids from people of my own group, teachers. Why is it that getting tough on them is viewed as the best way to deal with everyone in the world except ourselves? It's counterproductive. It's the educational equivalent of Robitussin cough syrup. We tell them it's good for them, even though it leaves a nasty taste in their mouth. And yes, there were times when I remembered the words of the great American patriot Patrick Henry, and I thought, if I have but one life to live for my country, let's make it Jacinto. But I remember one day when, looking over his shoulder, helping him with his writing, I told him the rule about never ending a sentence with a preposition, words like of, from, to, on, and with. He then proceeded to scribble two words for my purview, and they weren't happy birthday. I told him that off was also a preposition, and he'd have to rephrase that statement. Even in those trying moments, it's important to stand back with a rational mind and see the kid through the behavior. Part of being and becoming a valued teacher of these kids is resolving not to take angry comments personally. Those kids are looking for our soft spots. This is part of a test. Teachers of these kids need to develop the ability to take it, while using that moment to devise a supportive and professional intervention for a youngster who's in crisis. Of course, it's hard not to take it personally when someone says, F you. Okay? But we've got to remember, this kid is testing us out. Are we like the other teachers who've given up on this youngster? Or are we different? Well, despite the behavioral burrs under my saddle, I resisted the desire to buck them off, even when they were riding me too hard. I stuck with my training and the positive program we had developed. We set them up to do the right thing. We prompted them to show the appropriate behavior, and then we'd recognize them positively when they did the right thing. When they did the wrong thing, we'd express disappointment, but make it clear to them that we were disappointed because we know that they're capable of doing much better. We'd work on solving the problem instead of throwing blame and punishment back and forth. And we'd always work to find a way so that we could come together to promote positive change. And Jacinto and I were to become allies in changing his automatic habitual responses. Yeah, progress was slow into that hurricane force wind, and we sometimes fell down in our quest to move forward. That difficult trek is to be expected. However dysfunctional his behaviors may have been, they were his best attempt, given his life history, to protect himself from further emotional harm. And as with most of our BD kids, Jacinto appeared to be an emotional bull in an educational china shop. To the contrary, there are emotional china shops inside a bull. Rough, aggressive, and wildly misdirected on the outside, but protecting the highly fragile psyche from being gored by the self-appointed schoolhouse matadors. We bonded, two people from very different worlds in the way of age, experiences, culture, you name it. A mutual fondness developed, and we came to enjoy being with each other every day, or nearly every day. Jacinto even had dreams of becoming a teacher of kids with behavior disorders. Of course, he had those dreams while he was asleep in my class. In the late April of his second year with me, Jacinto's path to recovery was abruptly taken off course and quickly ended. His grandmother suffered a serious stroke. He then went to live in the home of an older cousin, not a blood relative, but a friend, who was at that time involved in the formation of a new chapter of the Bloods, a notorious street gang. And not long after, Jacinto was adjudicated to the local juvenile facility after being identified in a number of crimes, including petty thefts of the convenience store, the burglary of a home where he had attended a party the weekend before, the pummeling of a driver who had yelled at him to get your sorry ass out of the road, and a facial disfigurement, which was part of his initiation rite into the Bloods gang, that you had to slash the face of an unknown passerby with a razor and draw blood. Jacinto, a kid who felt so abandoned and lost, did horrible things in order to belong, to be valued. He wanted support in an unfriendly world. Unfortunately, the only ones who would accept him were those who had already been cast off themselves by society. How do we make sense of this and move forward? Psychologists tell us that our greatest human need is to belong, to be emotionally intertwined with others. Everyone on this granite planet needs to be intricately, emotionally intertwined with others. We need a soft place to fall. We need to be around people where we can be ourselves, where we can be valued, where we are respected, where we can be an important contributing member to the group. We all need to hear that we are safe, accepted, appreciated, and loved. Jacinto desperately wanted to belong to a caring and charismatic mentor. He wanted a pole star adult to guide him, but he also feared the rejection that always seemed to come when he thought he had permanently connected to someone. When youngsters stick themselves to adults and are repeatedly pulled away, something devastating happens. I do call it, the masking tape effect. Each time you peel it off the wall, it loses a little stickum, until eventually it refuses to adhere to a new surface. At that point, it usually gets thrown away. So imagine your soon-to-be Jacintos and Jacintas in a new chapter of their histories, arriving in an unfamiliar and scary place, your classroom. They've been separated yet again. For those kids placed in self-contained settings or in residential settings, especially those in residential settings, they've been separated from everything they know, even their friends, their home, their community. It's another terribly traumatic event added to an already long list of trauma in their short lives. They're told they'll be living here for the next 6 months, 2 years. They're told they'll come to like it over time because the people here are nice and they care about them. and that claim is true. But given a life history of rejection and maltreatment, would you believe these folks? Would you make yourself vulnerable? Would you trust their words? These kids want so much to believe in you folks, but how can they? They've lowered their guard before and seen their trust trampled. While our special classrooms are often wonderful places filled with good people in an orchestrated environment, they can be strange and perplexing to emotionally injured newcomers. In an attempt to lessen their vulnerability, disoriented people seek to gain some control over their circumstances. Jacinto and Jacinta use the behavior patterns that have driven away well-intentioned but poorly skilled adults before. They might also make quick alliances with other kids who haven't yet bought into this baffling place filled with a large number of adults, some of whom will probably reject them within a few days, others who will hang on a bit longer before giving up trying to reach them. These persistent and attacking behaviors, of which we professionals complain, are an attempt to protect themselves from yet another episode in the continuing series of "Fooled You Again." These kids just can't take the chance of being let down one more time in their lives. Jacinto and Jacinta will set out to prove that your staff is just like every other adult that they've experienced in their young lives. They intend to expose you for who you really are and get the inevitable rejection over with on their terms. Let's get it all out in the open. We know what's going to happen. Let's get it over with. And they'll wrap themselves in behavioral barbed wire, the prongs of which are long and sharp, hurting those who reach out to help. And this barbed exterior that they've developed to protect their fragile cores has served to repel those who might inflict more pain upon them. Sadly, it also repels those individuals like you who would give comfort and sanctuary. While you're being hastily judged as yet another person who will eventually reject and hurt them, remember that while these kids are hoping against hope that perhaps you might be... someone who passes their test, allowing them to finally lay down their defenses, be vulnerable, trusting children. So few adults, if any, have ever had the fortitude to continue to reach through the defenses despite the wounds suffered. Those who are able to work supportively with emotionally injured youth are part of a special breed. They willingly suffer the barbs and keep trying to get that physical or psychological hug, giving it and receiving it. They're like the people I watch on the television show titled The Antique Roadshow, where individuals show up at a big community center with things that they think might have some value, some old treasures to them. And they're able to see the value in what others have neglected or thrown on the trash heap. It takes even more observational astuteness to recognize underlying worth at a human level and to want to restore it to value. You are able to imagine the shine that would be there if we rubbed off the emotional tarnish, made necessary psychological repairs, and admired a somewhat flawed piece for its distinctiveness and inherent beauty. If you've taken the time to listen this far about how to help your students with emotional and behavioral disorders, you're one of those supportive folks, or soon will be. Speaking as someone who's worked with a lot of psychologically damaged kids, I want to say sincerely, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing for a misunderstood and underserved population. Your reward might not come here, but you Earth Angels have earned a few more points toward a wonderful afterlife. I'm Tom McIntyre of BehaviorAdvisor.com. Thank you for listening today.